Welcome to the Youtini Baseball Show. I'm your host, Anthony Schullo, and we are happy you're here for some baseball talk. Whether you're a diehard fan or new to the game, we're happy to be your baseball guides, exploring big questions about the game that we love. Today, we have a very special episode, a one-of-a-kind episode, a unicorn episode, if you will. Today, we'll discuss perhaps the biggest star this sport has ever seen. It's our Shohei Ohtani episode. Now, unfortunately, our friend Adam is under the weather today and won't be joining us for today's show, but we do have my fellow Shohei Ohtani stan and one of my brothers in baseball, Parker Kirk, as always here joining us. Parker, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Men's League Baseball starts up this weekend, so I'm pretty excited about that. Just got back from the batting cage, actually, before we started recording, so besides the fact that my Red Sox are currently down 5-3 in the game that determines whether we get swept by the Orioles, I'm doing pretty fantastic.
Well, talking about Orioles, some big news out of baseball this week. Baseball's number one prospect, Jackson Holliday, was called up this week. He's playing his first games with the Orioles this week, and lucky or not, Parker, you get a chance to see him in these games right off the bat, no pun intended. So we do have a scouting report question like we usually do, a scouting report trivia question. We'll get to that in a second. But just what you've seen from Jackson Holliday in these first few games, Parker, what's your impression?
So he's in his second big league game, and he looks like a player in his second big league game, which, you know, no harm, no foul. I mean, nobody's superhuman, right? He's had a few strikeouts already in his first couple games, but his presence at the plate is very good. For instance, about 10 minutes before we hit the record button, he's in an at-bat with the runner on, with actually a runner in scoring position, two runners on, against Kenley Jansen, like the sixth most saves in baseball history. Got two strikes on him and didn't chase an upstairs cutter. He ended up chasing another one later on in the at-bat strikeout, but he didn't, you know, he didn't fall for the typical rookie bait. Like, I'm going to throw this kid a pitch he's no way he's going to hit, and he's never going to, you know, he's none the wiser kind of thing that Jansen tried to throw him. And he looks like he's got a little bit of a presence at the plate there. He's made a couple good plays, and he's really fast on the base pass. So I'm really excited to see him. It's really cool to see his dad in the stands watching his game. And I'm excited for him. I'm also excited for his brother, who is apparently like projects to be even better when he makes it to the big league. So nice baseball family thing.
Yeah, they do have a hell of a baseball family. Matt Holliday, of course, spent a lot of years with the Cardinals, I believe with the Rockies and the Yankees. It's in the blood, folks. And Jackson Holliday is one of those players we talked about last week. We talked about the concept of a five-tool player, and Jackson Holliday has the potential to be that as he kind of grows into his own here in Major League Baseball. But like we do with every show, we want to start with the scouting report, where we go over a trivia question and we provide the answer at the end of our show. And today, Parker, you're actually going to give us the scouting report question, and it is a Jackson Holliday question, from my understanding.
Yeah, sticking with our theme, we got a Jackson Holliday question. So it's pretty simple, and it's pretty recent. You may have already caught it if you did watch his debut, but Jackson Holliday wears number 7 for the Baltimore Orioles. It's because his father wore number 7 when he was playing baseball professionally. My trivia question for you is, who did Jackson Holliday ask permission from to wear the number 7 for the Baltimore Orioles?
Really, really good one. I'm 99.99998% sure I know the answer, but you all will have to wait until the end of our show, and it's a good one. I love that. Love that question. A lot of good history baked into that one. Awesome. Well, today, Parker, you and I have been very excited about this show because we're talking about one of our favorite people in the sport. We're talking about Shohei Ohtani, and I will just say, every time someone talks to me about baseball, no matter whether they've been, you know, fans for life or new to the sport, one of the first questions I always get asked is, how about that Shohei Ohtani guy? He's been the talk of the sport since he came into the sport in 2018. He has been impressive every single year, doing things we've never seen before. So what we want to do today is we're not necessarily asking a question that we're out to answer today, but we're going to talk about kind of where the sport has been with Ohtani over the last several years now, what his journey has been like, and talk about some of the more recent developments that I'm sure we've all heard about in the Shohei Ohtani sphere. But I guess I'll start with this, Parker. when Shohei Ohtani, when you first heard about Shohei Ohtani, when was that for you? Was that, did you know a little bit about him when he started his career in Japan? Did you first hear about him when he was posted for MLB free agency? Like, when was your first introduction to Shohei?
So I heard about Shohei Ohtani the year before he was posted. And it was basically like a, hey, check this out. You know, one of those things that you catch on Twitter every once in a while. I don't even remember where I saw it the first time. Might have even been like Facebook or something. But it was like, check this guy out. He's a two-way player and he's playing in Japan. He pitches and hits. And of course, your first reaction is like, what? Like, nobody does that. Like, these days you hear about that and you're like, oh, wonder if this guy's going to be the next Ohtani. Well, back then we didn't have an Ohtani. And so when we heard about him, we were like, oh my God, wonder which one he's going to try to do when he comes over to the big leagues. And that's exactly what I thought. I was wondering which one he was trying to do. I was convinced he was just going to choose to be a pitcher, because why would you play 7 days a week when you could play one? And make the same amount of money, right? I was convinced he was going to be a pitcher. And that he would have to maybe pinch hit in the odd chance that you need a lefty, you know, late in the game or something like that. But I didn't think it was going to turn into what it eventually obviously did.
It you never really knew, right? I mean, we didn't know what to expect. I think we all know the history of Japanese players coming to the States and playing MLB is a long history, right? I mean, we can think of a million examples. We can think of, you know, Nomo, Matsui, Kosuke Fukudome, Daisuke Matsuzaka, one you're very familiar with.
Nomo, too. So, I mean, yeah, and Ichiro, guys like that.
So the history is long. I think we all understand, though, that what makes, of course, like Parker, like you said, him so unique to the history of Japanese players in Major League Baseball is his story and his history and his desire to be that true two-way player. And, you know, when you look at his background, so, you know, Shohei Ohtani, obviously born in Japan, born in a smaller kind of rural town in Japan. He, you know, signed with essentially a major league, with the equivalent of Major League Baseball, you know, the Japanese major leagues. He signed with the team when he was 18, very, very young, right out of high school. But when he signed with that team in Japan, I mean, there were talks then about him being a two-way player. And he did that through his whole career in Japan. So when we get to the point where he comes to the United States, rather, that was always in his blood. That was always a goal of his. But I think there is this concept of it being, you know, these players, whether they're coming from Japan, coming from Korea, when they get to Major League Baseball, there is the acknowledgement that it is another competitive level. You can make an argument that it's not too big of a competitive gap now than it was maybe 5 or 10 years ago. Obviously, I would make the argument that competitive gap is shrinking.
I would agree for sure.
But at that time, moving from Japan to the States, like you say, there was a question of whether or not he'd be able to do this. Now, if you go back and think about what two-way players look like in Major League Baseball history, I mean, I was kind of thinking about it the other day, Parker. I can't think of, I mean, we know the biggest one is Babe Ruth, right? That one always comes up.
Yep.
But, like, I'm thinking of recent memory. The only one that came to mind was Rick Ankiel.
Even really a two-way player, or was he just kind of like a convert?
That's the question. So that's the debate I had in my mind is, was he ever really trying to do both, or did he... you know, stop being an offensive player and go to pitching? Because I remember there was a point where Rick Ankiel, if I'm remembering correctly, started his career as an outfielder, spent a lot of years as an outfielder for the Cardinals, tried pitching, got the yips, never pitched again, and his career was over.
Do I remember that? Is it the opposite? It might be, did he start as a pitcher and then move to the outfield?
Now I got to look this up.
Now I got to know. But another two-way player that comes to mind, or at least semi-two-way player that comes to mind from recent memory, is Michael Lorenzen. Now he's a full-time pitcher.
Yeah.
But he did do some two-way stuff for the Reds in the last few years, at least. Okay, this is actually post-Shohei. Michael Lorenzen may owe his career to Shohei Ohtani, to be completely honest. And he's an all-star. You know, can't take that away from him. But, you know, I think he threw a no-hitter for the Phillies last year. So, I mean, he's a good pitcher in his own right, but as far as the two-way portion of his career, I would say he owes that part of it to Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been historical, attempts to do this, and I think we could even go into the database of even college players and see that college players to some degree have tried to do this, right? But the more you advance through your baseball career or development, from high school to, a junior college to maybe even you're doing a 4 year to majors, just the ability to do that slowly disappears, right? I think a lot of college players are forced to pick one. I think Shohei Ohtani has really opened the door for a lot of college coaches or high school coaches to think, well, hold on now a second. Maybe this is possible. Having said that, it is not easy, right?
No.
It is not something that you could just pick up and do. And I think that's what we need to understand. That is why Shohei Ohtani is so special. This is not something that next year you're going to see 10 two-way players come out of the draft. That's just not how this is going to work.
No, not at all. And it's important to make that distinction because, every player is a two-way player when they're younger. Like every coach's kid is out there playing shortstop and then gets brought in to start the next game or something like that. So everybody's a two-way player as a kid, and then eventually at some point you are asked to pick. And that's part of the reason why I'm so thankful that Shohei Ohtani is from Japan, because I don't think that if he was coming up through the American, really baseball factory that kind of exists, I don't think that he finishes his professional development as a two-way player. I think that Shohei Ohtani at some point is forced to pick, and I think at some point he just decides to be a hitter. But
That's
thankfully,
it.
he's Japanese, and they are much more open-minded, I guess, back out there about that kind of thing.
You bring up a really good point, and I want to come back to it when we talk about him ultimately signing with the Angels when he does move over to Major League Baseball. We'll talk about that in a second. I do want to, before we leave this and move on to that, I want to talk about the Babe Ruth thing for a second, because there have been a million and one comparisons to Babe Ruth. Every time you hear about what Shohei Ohtani has done in the league, since 2018, you hear about his comparisons to Babe Ruth. I'm gonna get on my soapbox for a second here. Babe Ruth did great things for the sport. Fantastic player, no doubt about it. One of the best players in baseball history. But I really want to provide some context for these comparisons that we're making for a few reasons. Babe Ruth played in Major League Baseball from 1914 to 1935. He was a two-way player. He pitched and he hit. But I don't think people realize that Babe Ruth really, really only pitched from 1914 to about 1922, and then again later in his career in 1934, 1935. So
And I think that was only for a couple starts.
definitely later on for a couple starts. So if I even pull up, I had it up here. Shame on me. Where'd it go? So for his pitching specifically, some of his best pitching years were 1916, 1917 for the Red Sox. So in 1916, he had 23 wins, 1.75 ERA. In 1917, Babe Ruth had 24 wins and just above a 2 ERA. Now, he stopped pitching regularly in 1921. Now, hold that thought for a second. So he stopped pitching in 1921.
Right.
All right. Now, you go to his batting stats in 1921, 59 homers. Next year, 35, 41, 46, 25, 47, 60, 54. He didn't really hit regularly to that degree until he stopped pitching regularly.
Yes.
Why that's important, folks, why that is important is because Babe Ruth was a great pitcher for a chunk of time, a great hitter for a larger chunk of time. But for the vast majority of his career, he did not do those things at the same time, which makes Shohei Ohtani so much different. This is a guy who was pitched at a Cy Young level and a guy who has hit and played baseball at a MVP level simultaneously. And that is why, while I respect the Babe Ruth comparisons, I do truly believe this is at another level.
Just kind of what you were saying about how Babe Ruth, you can literally visually see in the numbers the 2 years where he had to decide. In 1920, he hit 54 home runs, and in 1921, he hit 59 home runs. And then he stopped pitching. So, like, clearly it was like, oh, I'm really good at this hitting thing. For the record, he set the big league record in 1919 with 29 home runs, then reset it in 1920 with 54 home runs, and then reset it in 1921 with 59 home runs. And that's when it was like, okay, I'm hitting now. Like, I'm going to hit and go play serviceable right field for whatever team I'm playing for at the time, the Yankees. So the fact that Shohei Ohtani has been able to put up MVP-level numbers, he could win the MVP hitting in the years that he did hit. And I think that the thing that really, really portrays how valuable Shohei Ohtani has been the fact that he gives your team another roster spot. Mm. No other player in baseball gives you a 27-man roster. Shohei Ohtani pitches as a starting pitcher and DHs. Those are two roster spots on any other big league ball club. But the ball club that pays for Shohei Ohtani bought themselves another roster spot. There is no level of money. If you told every big league ball club right now that they could spend $50 to $60 million per year, if not more, I would say they'd even pay up to $100, $150 million a year for one more roster spot, they would be considered uncompetitive if they did not do that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. It's, you know, when we talk about that comparison between Babe Ruth and Shohei, and you just kind of did that comparison of looking at the pitching stats and batting stats in the same year for Babe Ruth, and this is where it gets to be a pretty significant deal when you look at kind of the year-to-year stats for both batting and pitching for Shohei. I mean, it's kind of insane. So if you go to his MVP season, so his first MVP season, his AL MVP season, would have been 2021. Now, if you look at 2021, his batting stats, mm-hmm. we're looking at 46 homers, 100 RBIs, batting about 250, smidge above 250. 26 stolen bases. The guy's fast. Now, in addition to that, on the pitching side, he pitched with 3.18 ERA, had 156 strikeouts and 130 innings. Like, this is a guy, again, who can perform at a high MVP Cy Young caliber level on both sides of the ball at the same time. And that is what blows my mind about this guy more than anything, because you think about all the time that a Cy Young pitcher like Gerrit Cole puts into their craft, or an MVP Ronald Acuna Jr. puts into their craft. Imagine those guys putting that much into their craft times two. That's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Shohei Ohtani manages to do... I don't know if the guy has like a hyperbolic time chamber that he goes and takes BP in every day, but the fact that he can be a big league starting pitcher and hit, not just for the time that it takes, because it does take time, but the strain that a big league pitcher puts on their body, and he'll touch 100 every once in a while with his fastball. He's at mm-hmm. least sitting mid to upper 90s. The guy is not a Greg Maddux type who's placing the ball wherever he wants to. He's a power pitcher that also happens to hit 46, you said, home runs in his MVP. He's incredible. He's truly, like you said at the beginning of the episode, he is a unicorn. He may not ever happen again. Somebody like Shohei Ohtani may never touch this sport again. And big league baseball has come under a lot of fire in the last, 10 to 15 years especially, for not marketing their star players. The fact that you can go up to my wife, who does not watch sports, knows who Shohei Ohtani is and has been tracking the Shohei Ohtani news in recent weeks, which we will get to. That's LeBron James stuff. That's Michael Jordan stuff. People who don't follow basketball know who LeBron James and Michael Jordan are, and people who do not watch baseball might tune into a Dodgers game just to see Shohei pitch.
100%. And that really encapsulates why Shohei Ohtani is so important to the game of baseball now more than ever. And we'll kind of end the show talking about that because it's an important thing that we need to certainly cover here. Before we kind of wrap up this first part of our Shohei talk, go back to what your impressions were, if you could, of when Shohei actually signed with Los Angeles Angels back in 2018 when he came to MLB. What was your reaction? What was your first kind of thought when you heard he was signing with the LA Angels?
So I was very excited, not for Shohei, but for Mike Trout. I was super, super excited. Because at that time, the Angels looked like they were poised to kind of do something. They had Albert Pujols was still on that roster, and every year Albert Pujols spent in Los Angeles, you were like, this is the year, man. This is going to be the year that he brings it and has an incredible season, and the Angels win, you know, crazy amounts of playoff games, make a run at the World Series. Well, of course, we know that never really happened, but in the year 2018, that was an Angels team that did have Mike Trout, then Shohei Ohtani, and then Albert Pujols, and it was like, okay, this team is ready. Like, this team can go. As far as why Shohei chose the Angels, I'm not going to lie, that kind of caught me really off guard. I was like, okay, maybe he does want to play with Mike Trout, because at that point, Mike Trout was king of the world. Like, I'm going to pull up his baseball reference page, because I don't know if you know this, but Mike Trout has a baseball reference page, and it's pretty awesome. But at that time, I'm trying to see when he won his. So he was the MVP twice and the runner-up for the MVP three times before Shohei Ohtani even showed up. So it's like, oh, the Angels are going now. And then Mike Trout finished runner-up for the MVP that year as well. So it was pretty exciting to see, like, okay, so the Angels are ready to do something. And it come to find out in Shohei's mind, the Angels happen to be a very clear choice. I'm sure Mike Trout had something to do with it, but the really most important part of that was they were the people willing to let Shohei be exactly the player he wanted to be. And if I'm not mistaken, at that time, John Madden was the manager of the Angels, unless I'm
So at the time, Mike Socha, that was his last year, actually, in 2018. Yeah.
So Mike Socha also falls into that category of like a guy who is not, he was not opposed to doing just basically what needed to happen to win. If anybody remembers that 2002 Angels team that won the World Series, not a team you had picked at the beginning of the season to win the World Series. No. But kind of just a team that got it done however they need to. And Mike Socha was a huge part of why. And at the time he left the Angels, I believe he was the longest tenured manager in baseball at the time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he was.
Kind of the perfect situation for Shohei to show up to. Almost like a changing of the guard kind of thing, which now that you think about it, it's pretty weird, but.
It is. You know, the Angels, we talked about it here, but before, the Angels have always been a little bit of an odd organization in their path to where they are today. And Shohei Ohtani certainly was, I think, surprised everyone that the Angels would commit those dollars and make a move as bold as that. You know, what I will recommend folks is, you know, if you really want to learn more about Ohtani and get an inside scoop of kind of his childhood growing up, you know, in Japan, joining the major leagues and his journey to the Angels, highly recommend on Disney Plus the documentary Shohei Ohtani Beyond the Dream. Really good stuff in there if you're interested. Highly recommend that. Before we kind of get on to more Shohei talk, because we're getting into, I mean, we have a lot more to discuss, especially with recent news with Ohtani. But before we do that, I want to make sure we talk a little bit about some of the other exciting shows that we have as part of the Utini podcast network. Parker, why don't you tell the folks about the new Utini show?
Absolutely. Guys, if you love the work that we do here at Utini, we have so much can't-miss content. You definitely don't want to miss the Utini Show, our ultimate gateway to exploring fandoms. If you've been part of our community for some time, you are familiar with the guys that brought you the Living Force podcast. Corey, Eric, Charles, Wes, the crew's back. They're better than ever, talking their favorite fandoms and exploring those they are curious about. You never know what you're going to get when the guys get together. Be sure you're tuning in to the Utini Show every Monday on the Utini YouTube channel and get ready to expand your fandom.
Speaking of great shows, you 100% also need to be tuning into our longest-running Youtini Network podcast, Legends Look Back, a wild and wacky exploration of the Star Wars expanded universe covering so many different things, including but not limited to Emperor Palpatine coming back from the dead the first time, hotshot X-Wing pilots and their bad love advice, which Star Wars villains would win in a beauty contest? Ooh, that's actually a really good question. The guys at Legends Look Back are always having a ton of fun. They are currently doing a year-long deep dive on the new Jedi Order series, which is Star Wars' most ambitious storytelling initiative to date. So that'll be really exciting. Eager to join the fellas, learn more about that. But the episodes are available wherever you get your podcasts, of course. Plus, they do a live show every other Tuesday night on the Youtini Vault YouTube channel. Again, so Youtini Vault YouTube channel. Don't miss out on the Legends fun with the Legends Look Back crew. Parker.
Yes.
Recently, it's been a little bit of a rocky road for Shohei over the last 2 weeks, at least coming out of spring training and into the season. We had some news about Shohei Ohtani's interpreter and some kind of gambling issues that rest at the feet of his interpreter. Why don't you catch the people up on kind of the timeline, what happened, kind of lay the land for us.
Okay, I'm going to need everybody to strap in because this is a long and convoluted situation, but I did a lot of research and I have the entire timeline broken down. Big, big thanks to Dane Perry of CBS Sports. I used his article for a lot of the reference for this timeline. If you want to, you can go read the article. I will tweet it on the show's Twitter account on the day that this episode drops. Okay, so in March of 2020, well, first of all, before all this, Ipe Mizuhara is Shohei Ohtani's interpreter. He has been Shohei Ohtani's interpreter basically since he was signed with the Angels organization. He even traveled with him when he signed with the Dodgers. But while Shohei was with the Dodgers in March of 2021, Ipe Mizuhara was at a poker game in San Diego, and he met Matthew Boyer, who runs an illegal gambling ring in Southern California. Not long after that, he begins gambling with Boyer's book on borrowed money, on credit. So, late 2022, a little over a year, Ipe's gambling debt reaches $1 million. He begins asking his family and friends for funds and borrowing money from them at that time. In early 2023, Ipe's gambling debt reached $4 million, which is when he started asking Ohtani for help with his debt. Now, it's important to make the distinction. We don't know if this is gambling debt that he told Shohei he had or just some other debt, and we don't know if he told him the number. Late 2023, two separate wire transfers of $500,000 leave Shohei Ohtani's bank account and are received by Boyer. That's confirmed. The IRS found that. Ipe would later admit to up to 9 wire transfers, all of which were for $500,000. In October of 2023, federal agents execute a search warrant of Matthew Boyer's home. So the guy who's running the gambling ring, his house is getting searched. The federal government is busting him. In December of 2023, so just this past December, Shohei Ohtani signed a $700 million contract with the Los Angeles Dodgers. This past January, federal agents who raided Boyer's home discovered Ohtani's name on the wire transfers. This is where it starts to get, like, crazy. On March 18th of this year, reporters reached out to Nez Bellillo, the agent for Shohei Ohtani, and asked about his client's name appearing on wire transfers to Boyer. Bellillo does not respond to inquiries, and soon after, the Ohtani team hires a crisis communications expert, a separate person to run crisis stuff for Shohei Ohtani. That spokesperson is the person that made Ipe available for a 90-minute ESPN interview. In that interview, Ipe admitted to placing bets with DraftKings Sportsbook while in America, and he said that is what led him to assume that he could place bets with an unsanctioned sportsbook like Boyer, and he chose to do so because Boyer let him do it on credit. He didn't have to have money to gamble with. He could gamble with debt. According to ESPN, in that interview, he said, "I want people to know that I did not know this was illegal. I learned my lesson the hard way. I will never do sports betting again." Mark Walter, the Dodgers owner, calls the team into the clubhouse after they open the season in Seoul, South Korea. Ipe admits to the team that he has a gambling addiction. Then, in the same meeting, the club president of baseball operations, Andrew Friedman, tells players that Ohtani has helped to cover Mizuhara's debts. Then, as the stories are set to be published, the Ohtani crisis spokesperson, who we still don't know the name of, denies Ipe's version of events. He states that Ohtani's camp will be publishing a statement soon. Then, Ohtani's lawyers make that statement to CBS Sports. That statement reads, "In the course of responding to recent media inquiries, we discover that Shohei has been the victim of massive theft, and we're turning the matter over to the authorities." Now, I'm going to read this quote real quick. On the way back to the hotel, Ohtani starts asking questions about what had been said in the clubhouse. The Ohtani spokesman told ESPN and his representatives that that's when Ohtani told them he didn't recognize Mizuhara's version of the events. So this is why the story changed. This is why, initially, Ohtani's spokesperson and Ohtani's camp basically were corroborating Mizuhara's report, because in the car on the way home from the Dodgers-Padres game that opened the season is when Ohtani found out what Mizuhara was actually saying to the press. Remember, this is Shohei's interpreter, who literally realized the events in the room that are being spoken to him. So, according to Dodgers official and Ohtani spokesman, Ohtani's representatives had continued to rely on Ipe to communicate with Ohtani while they were dealing with the situation, and Ipe did not tell Ohtani what was happening. So just, I'm not even going to get into conjecture at this point. We'll keep going. Now, March 20th, that Wednesday, is the first day that Shohei Ohtani discovered the money missing from his account, according to Ohtani's spokesman. On March 2nd, the AP reported that the IRS has launched a criminal investigation of both Ipe and Boyer through the Los Angeles field office, and an attorney for Boyer, who's the alleged bookie, tells CBS Sports that her client had no contact with Mr. Ohtani. Then, on that same day, Shohei Ohtani does not speak to the press and declines to comment. The next day, MLB releases a statement that says, "Major League Baseball has been gathering information since we learned about the allegations involving Shohei Ohtani, and we're launching an investigation." Then, the same day, the Red Sox also released a statement saying that, contrary to what had been reported, Ipe never worked for the Red Sox and never was Hideki Okajima's interpreter, as was listed on his resume that he used to get hired by the Angels in the first place. March 25th, we're getting to the end here. March 25th, Ohtani holds a presser and says a lot of things, but in conclusion, his final statement was, "In conclusion, I do want to make it clear, I never bet on sports or have willfully set money to the bookmaker. To summarize how I'm feeling right now, I'm beyond shocked. It's hard to verbalize how I'm feeling at this point." Fast forward to the date of recording, April 11th, 2024. Ipe is charged with bank fraud for allegedly stealing more than $16 million from Shohei Ohtani by the IRS, the Department of Homeland Security, and the United States Attorney's Office. The quote from the report says, Mr. Mizuhara stole this money largely to finance his voracious appetite for illegal sports gambling. Also, and this is the last thing, also happening today, the IRS report outlined that Ipe made losing bets of $138 million, winning bets of $142 million, with total losses in the $40 millions. It also said that they have phone records of Ipe calling the bank and impersonating Ohtani to make bank transfers to Boyer. It also says that Ipe changed the notification settings on Ohtani's bank app so that it would not notify him when huge transfers were being made from the bank account. The IRS, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. Attorney's Office did not find a single shred of evidence that Shohei Ohtani or Ipe Mizuhara bet on a single baseball game anytime.
Wow. I know that was a lot, folks. I know that was a lot to follow. Thank you, Parker, for laying it all out. And it is important, because I'm trying to think where I want to start with this, because number one, we've never seen anything even remotely like this in this sport. And I guess the best place to start is thinking about, and I want to be very clear with this, you know, how absolutely shameful that someone in a position of trust, and by that I mean Shohei entrusting in Ipe as the interpreter, which, let me make it very clear how this works in baseball. These folks aren't really just interpreters, right?
No.
These folks end up being really, really close to these players. Think about it. Whether you have a Spanish interpreter, Japanese interpreter, it doesn't matter. These interpreters get to know these players. They help these players with a lot of other things outside of interpreting to navigate their world, right? I mean, even Shohei said in this whole escapade, if you want to call it that, Shohei had made it very clear, like, yeah, I trusted him. Like, yeah, he helped me with a lot of things. Like, and a lot of the accounts of how Ipe and Shohei worked together was more of Ipe being Shohei's assistant, not just a translator. Yeah, I mean,
he's like a personal assistant. He's an interpreter. He's doing banking, taxes,
yes.
All these things for him.
And that's not out of the ordinary for these players coming from other countries. So to be in a position like that and take advantage of Shohei to that degree is absolutely disgusting. And I felt that way 2-3 weeks ago. But after seeing the numbers come out today, it's just so hard to put into words. I mean, I guess I'm at a loss for words, don't really know what to say. But I do want to ask you, Parker, what were you first thinking when you heard this news around opening day? Because there was a fear, I think, for a lot of us in the sport and in the fandom. The first thought was, oh no, please Shohei, don't let this be at the feet of Shohei and something that Shohei was involved in. And that was worrisome for a little bit.
Yeah, so the episode will probably never see the light of day, but we did record episode 0, like our test episode of this podcast, right around when the Soul Series was happening. And I want to say during that episode, I said something to the effect of, if Shohei is guilty of this, or maybe it was in another conversation, but either way, if Shohei is guilty of this, this could be incredibly detrimental to the sport of baseball to the point of like putting it on life support. This man is genuinely the face of baseball in two different countries, and his involvement in something, if in the worst case scenario, because remember at this time we didn't know anything, we just heard gambling and Ohtani's name in the same sentence. In the situation that was the worst case scenario, which was Shohei Ohtani's rigging baseball games and making bets on those games, it literally could have torn the sport apart, kind of in a way that we hadn't really seen in the past. Maybe since, like, the Black Sox scandal of 1919. Like, this was massive. And I'm just really happy that it didn't end up turning out that way. I was just scared. I wasn't trying to pass judgment or anything like that. I was just really scared of the worst-case scenario.
Yeah, I never thought for a second in my heart of hearts that knowing Shohei, seeing him around the sport, knowing a little bit of his background, that this is just who he was as a person, that he would even ever be involved in it. But it is, I'm really happy that through those texts and phone calls that they were able to gather as part of the investigation, Ipe did confess. He was very straightforward about it. It's a shame he didn't do that earlier, that we had to go through this whole rigmarole. But more than anything, I'm just kind of glad that it's over. Certainly, it's not a victimless crime. You know, Shohei's out a ton of money. And I don't care if you have a little bit of money or a lot of money. If you're out money, you're out money. And
$16 million is a lot of money to everybody.
Absolutely. And more than anything, it's just an absolute betrayal. And I would hate for Shohei or anyone to go through something like that.
I can't even fathom, like, what that relationship, like, I would not be surprised if Shohei Ohtani never has an interpreter again. Now, granted, of course, you get stronger with the language as you go, but like, I don't know. How can, it's almost like when I've never had a relationship this long in, but if you're in like a 10 plus year relationship and it ends due to like infidelity or something, like that's got to be something that absolutely cripples your ability to trust. And I just feel like, especially because you and I talked about this before the podcast, like I think Shohei Ohtani is probably my favorite player ever, and I always get self-conscious when I think that because like it's like the easy answer nowadays. But I feel for the guy, like, not just as a baseball player, not only as my favorite baseball player, but as a person. I like that has got to just hurt anybody posting that story. That story would go viral if it wasn't the most famous baseball player of all time, you know?
100%. It's more than anything, I'm just happy that we can put it behind us and that it has not affected the sport the way that it could very well have had, for lack of a better way to phrase that. But I kind of want to wrap up the Shohei Ohtani conversation quickly by just capping it off by talking about really what's next for Shohei. I mean, obviously, he signed with the Dodgers to the most money that any baseball player has ever signed, you know, a $700 million deal. And I wonder kind of how he fits into the Dodgers' short-term and long-term plans. You know, when you sign a player like that, it's not just for what he can do on the field, but you're signing him for being the face of your franchise, for bringing in sponsorships and marketing. And, like, I guess it comes down to just answering the question of, has Shohei Ohtani rejuvenated Major League Baseball, perhaps at a time when Major League Baseball really needed it?
I had the incredible pleasure of going to two different Angels games, or games where the Angels were playing while Shohei was with the Angels. One of them was in Angel Stadium, one of them was in Fenway Park in Boston. And both of those games were sellouts. Both of those games, I'm talking about like random games where the Angels are out of it in like August, both of them. And both of those games were sellouts. Both of those games were electric atmosphere. The game, everything in the stadium stops when Shohei Ohtani is hitting. And every foul ball, you know, like you ever been to a big game where it's tied in the eighth or something like that, and big moments up, and somebody hits a foul ball that's, even though it's clearly foul, people gasp. That is every foul ball Shohei Ohtani hits. Like, the man grips the sport with an iron fist. The attention is on him. He has made the sport more diverse. I have never seen a crowd more diverse than at the games that I've been with Shohei playing. It's an incredible atmosphere. His fans absolutely love him. His countrymen absolutely love him. It is so cool to see the effect he has in the game. And these are not even games he's pitching in. I couldn't get tickets to the game in Boston he was pitching in. It was insane. Genuinely think that he might be the best thing to happen to the sport since, like, the sport, almost. Like, this, his effect is tangible. It's palpable. There's a reason every single baseball fan on the planet had a sliver of hope that their team would make a run at him in free agency. And every baseball fan on the planet, whether they want to admit it or not, was at least a little disappointed when he didn't sign with their team.
100% partner. I could not say that better myself. That's perfectly said. Before we move on to our wild pitch, like we do at the end of all of our shows, a little programming note. Obviously, won't be the first time we're talking about Shohei Ohtani. Certainly will come up in more conversations as we go along through the season. We did notice last week when we talked about lineups and rotation construction that we just didn't really give as much love to pitching rotations as we should have. So I'm not going to spoil it entirely, but next week we are revisiting starting pitchers in a very unique way. So we're not going to spoil it, but stay tuned. Next week we're talking about a very interesting topic that pertains to recent news and starting pitchers, so hint, hint. So be on the lookout for that. But I do want to hop into Wild Pitch, just a little bit of a different format since our friend Adam's not here with us. But what we are going to do for Wild Pitch, much like we do every other week, Adam has picked a player for his pitch. I picked a player for my pitch. The Wild Pitch this week, Parker, was Adam was a GM of a team, and he's asking us for the best number three starter that we could provide him, and he was going to select from our two pitches. So today's going to be a little unique. What we're going to do is going to give the pitches. I'm going to try to guess Parker's player. Parker's going to try to guess my player. And at the end of this, we are going to put a poll out on Twitter, on X, where you can go ahead and vote for which player you would pick for your team should you be in a GM or a president of baseball ops role. So I'm okay, Parker, if you want to start this one off today.
Yeah, yep. I think I'll go ahead and go first. Now, if you watched last episode, that was our predictions episode. We talked about who we thought was going to win awards in baseball. And if you remember, when Adam said he wanted the best number three starter in baseball, I immediately knew who I was picking, and that's because my pitch is going to be my AL Cy Young pick. This player is in his age 26 season. He was born on the 5th of May in 1997. He's currently in his third year as a starting pitcher for this. He's the third starter for their team this season. Excuse me. He's currently carrying a 2.66 ERA. and a 1.37 ERA plus, which means he's 37% better than the average pitcher in baseball. He leads the American League currently with 20.1 innings pitched. Last year, he threw 190 and two-thirds innings. He threw 185 innings the year before, an over 162 game average. So if he were to play, you know, the next 162 games at his average pace, he would pitch 193 innings over that span. He's in his first year of salary arbitration, which means he is a cool $4 million. It's a great way to keep your starting rotation cheap and also get some quality out of it. And he's under team control until the year 2028. So you got him on your team for a while. He's not making the most money right now, so he's probably going to come cheap. Extend him early, and who knows, you may save yourself a buck or two. He is an absolute workhorse. He's going to hit 200 innings this year if you were to ask me right now, and I am asking myself. He's got a below an ERA below 3. He's shown that he can do that in the past. I think he's going to win the Cy Young this year in the American League. So I don't know, man. I think you got your work cut out for you again, because this is my guy.
All right, before I do mine, I am going to guess yours. I do think yours is the Seattle Mariners' Logan Gilbert.
Logan Gilbert, yes, he is.
Okay, so that's fantastic pick. I couldn't agree with you more. I think the guy is an absolute stud. You're going to see some similarities with my guy.
Okay.
Which is very interesting. So here's what I'll tell you. I want to invite you to my home state of Illinois, if you could. Come with me on a journey.
Let's go.
Let's come to my home state, the cornland. Specifically the small town of Nokomis, where a certain lefty pitcher was born in 1999. If you don't know where Nokomis is, that's okay, because I don't either.
Nobody does.
Nobody does. This small town boy, he's unassuming, he is humble, and if you're looking for a current third starter with cost control, with reliability, and some crazy upside, there's really no person better than this guy. So he was selected in the first round of the 2020 MLB draft at number 10 overall. This southpaw quickly made his debut the following year in 2021. Since his debut, he's had some incredible pitching performances, most notably in 2022 when he pitched the 12th no-hitter in the team's history. It was in his 11th start. So think about that for a second. In just his second season, in his 11th start in all of his baseball career, he pitched a no-hitter. Despite some below-average seasons in 22 and 23, he did struggle a little bit in those seasons, which, let's be honest, those seasons he was on a team where there was some inadequate defense, hot and cold offense. But despite that, this guy still managed to be worth around 2.5 WAR each of those seasons. And for a third starter, I'll take that every week.
That's pretty good.
But when we say we're looking for a third starter, I think you need someone who you can rely on and has an arrow pointing up, right? So this guy definitely has an arrow pointing way up. Here in 2024, he's 2-0. He has a 1.64 ERA on the season, and he has 19 strikeouts over 11 innings. His stuff is crazy good, and he's obviously he's really making batters look silly so far this season. This is probably because he has a really solid pitch mix, so he has the ability to mix up speeds as well. He's working with about a 94.3-mile-an-hour fastball. He's got a slider, a curveball, a changeup. What makes his secondary pitches so special is the drop in velocity. He's really fooling some batters because that changeup, curveball, and slider mix, it's more of a 75 to 85 mile an hour speed on those pitches, which is probably why he is 98th percentile in whiff percentage and 99th percentile in K percentage, all to say that this 24-year-old lefty is really just getting started, and he's still under team control for some time, much like Logan Gilbert. This is his first season of arbitration coming up here. He is also for team control through 2027, free agent 2028. So you're looking at 4 more years of team control. So really, when it comes to a third starter, this is the type of guy you want on your team. He's young, he's up and coming, he's reliable, he's cost controlled. I mean, what more do you need? He's a stud.
So, okay, I already just Googled my guess, and I think I got it right.
Okay.
So my guess didn't change. Yes, I did cheat technically, but my guess didn't change. I couldn't wait. Are you describing Reed Detmers?
I sure am.
I am a pick.
I'm a Reed Detmers stan.
I love Reed Detmers, man. He threw that freaking no-hitter. He was absolutely insane in that no-hitter. I have the unfortunate pleasure of saying that he has already beaten my Red Sox this year. He gave up just absolutely nothing to them. He's going to play them again in like 3 days, and it's so annoying. Oh, God, I love Reed Detmers. At one point, like a couple weeks ago, I put him in on Twitter as like his 98 overall card on Diamond Dynasty was like my favorite pitcher of MLB The Show 23 last year. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of who you picked as well. That was a really good pick.
And also, he just has a cool ass name, Reed Detmers.
Reed Detmers is a pitcher name, dude. That is
a totally pitcher.
Oh,
name.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, folks, go ahead and follow us on. Make sure you're following us on X. Parker will go ahead and post that poll, and you can go ahead and pick which player you'd have on your team. Do you prefer Logan Gilbert or do you prefer Reed Detmers? Let us know on X. But I want to get back to the scouting report question and wrap up that way. Parker, you had a really good question today. Why don't you remind us what the scouting report question is today?
Okay, so the question is, Jackson Holliday just made his big league debut on April 10th of 2024. He's playing for the Baltimore Orioles, and he wears number 7. Prior to making his big league debut, his father also wore number 7 during his big league career. Who did Jackson Holliday have to ask permission from to wear number 7 for the Baltimore Orioles? Bonus points.
Okay.
If you can guess who was the person wearing it, because the person that he asked and the people that he asked and the person wearing it are two different people.
I think I got this. I could be wrong, but I think I got this. It is a very historic question, especially when it comes to the Orioles franchise.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure that Jackson Holliday asked Cal Ripken Jr. because Cal Ripken Sr. was the last to wear number 7 for the Baltimore Orioles.
Yep. So Jackson Holliday, you're absolutely correct. He had to ask Cal and Billy Ripken, who wasn't an immediate yes. They had to discuss. Cause so I got this off of the Red Sox broadcast actually today while I was listening to the ballgame. And Kevin Millar, who also has history with the Orioles organization, was in the booth for the Red Sox. And he said that Cal and Billy told him the story that Jackson Holliday called and asked them how he got his number. I'm assuming it has something to do with his dad, but Jackson Holliday called and asked Cal and Billy to see if he could wear number 7 when he made his big league debut. Cal and Billy didn't give him an immediate answer. They called, they talked about it. You know, their dad obviously meant a lot to him. Not only did they grow up with their dad, but he was also their big league coach. And the last person to wear number 7 for the Orioles was Cal Ripken Sr. when he was coaching for the Orioles. And they said, what better person than the next big thing for the Orioles than Jackson Holliday to wear that number? So I thought that was a super cool story. I was so torn this past couple days, man, watching Jackson Holliday, because I am so excited for him as a baseball player. But he really had to make his big league debut against my Sox.
He sure did. But you know what? What you described there, Parker, is just another reason why we love this game. Tradition, family, honor, respect really is, key components of this beautiful game.
Absolutely. Yeah, man, I can't get enough of it.
Awesome. That's a wrap for this week's edition of the Utini Baseball Show. If you are a member of the United on Patreon, hey, we appreciate you. Special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Buzinski on our High Council, and to our captains, James T., Ashley Inglis, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo for their amazing support. Don't forget, you can interact with our baseball team on X. You can follow the show at Utini Baseball, and you can find each of our individual X handles right there in the show bio. Conversation doesn't stop here, folks. We are always talking baseball in Discord, so be sure to hop into our baseball channel. Enjoy the fun. A huge shout out to our behind the scenes team. We have our editor Kyle for making our show sound great all the time, and of course to Adam and Parker for being baseball rock stars. Support for this show and all Utini Network podcasts come from the United Patreon community. At the heart of the Utiniverse, the United is where our most passionate fans gather for a deep exploration of all types of fandom: Star Wars, Marvel, Dune, Fortnite, baseball. The list goes on and on. We'll catch you next week here on the Utini Baseball Show.